And of course, our special guest this hour, John Truman Wolf. We're going to take your calls with him. His book, the latest, The Coming Financial Crisis. You've heard some of the things we've talked about. Let's get your take on it, too, when we come right back. Okay, back with you, John Truman Wolf with us, The Coming Financial Crisis, your phone calls as well. Well, as the Fed continues to print, they're not slowing down there, John, are they?
No, they're not slowing down. Well, yes and no. They're not slowing down printing, George, but their program to their QE program has, in fact, ended. You know, they were buying, I think it was $48 billion a month of securities, and that program has stopped. But again, it's not, people looked at that and they thought, okay, this is going to be inflation, and it's not. The opposite has happened. Because even as they did that, which was foolish economically, people realized that the banks didn't lend. So if the banks aren't lending, if there isn't credit, and unfortunately, George, this country is, you know, they live on credit.
That's right.
So if that's not going on, then you get a deflationary environment. So all the printing that they're doing has not driven inflation. In fact, we're in a deflationary environment.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because, you know, I was always told that inflation really isn't that good if it goes too high.
Well, of course it's not good. If it goes too high, it's not good. I mean,
I remember 20% interest rates during the Carter administration.
Back to those, yeah, prime rates at way, way up there. You know, theoretically, what is supposed to be good is about 2% inflation. Right, but for the last few years, it hasn't been anywhere even near that. The right thing to do with money, George, is to have money represent goods and products. If there was a system whereby our currency represented production, real estate and production, there wouldn't be inflation and deflation. There would be enough money to buy what there was to buy. During the colonial era, that's what they did, and the country thrived until the Bank of England heard about it and squashed that program. At any rate, that's something, it's an ideal that we should strive for as far as I'm concerned.
I want to get into some tips that you can give a lot of folks here, John, that things they should be aware of or do over the next couple of years. Let's take some calls, but let's definitely do that. Let's go to Leo in New Mexico, west of the Rockies. Leo, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, gentlemen. Thank you for a fine program. It's a prescient topic. My question is, I have two questions, actually. I don't stand to lose money on investments because I don't have any money to invest. I'm a disabled veteran, and I live month to month on a government, a check. So, and my other question is to know, is a planned financial collapse within the United States to bring us into line with the creation of a one world government, in your opinion? And I'll listen off the air.
One world government, probably. John?
Yes. Single word answer, yes. I mean, this is being orchestrated by the Bank of International Settlements. People want to call that a conspiracy theory. Be my guest. All you got to do is read the book. All the data is in there. The Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, which most people have never even heard of, is the central banker's central bank. It is that entity, which is above the law, George. Swiss law doesn't affect it. Its employees are immune from prosecution. They have their own law enforcement, military on the property. It is like a nation unto itself. And that entity, all the central banks of the world belong to that bank. And it is they that are dictating interest rates and controlling things. So, we could get into, who's on that board and so forth and so on. But the answer is they want to control the economies of planet Earth, and they are on their way to doing so, protecting the big banks as they do so with this bail-in policy.
Okay, next up we go to Greg in New Jersey. Greg, thanks for calling. Good morning to you. You're on the air with us.
Great show as always, George.
Thank you.
Well, also immune from prosecution are all the criminals on Wall Street. You had the whole meltdown in 2008. Unbelievable scenario. Nobody got prosecuted. Nobody went to jail. I was hoping we'd see a big guillotine down on Wall Street. I work in Midtown. But here's the thing. Wasn't about $20 trillion from the Federal Reserve given out to all the banks around the world, and we only heard this for one day in the Financial Times?
Yes, the details of those loans, Greg, are in the book. And it was just, again, to use this word, I don't want to be too repetitious, but fiscal insanity.
Who pressed for those figures to be released, sir?
I'm sorry, say again?
Who pressed for those figures to be released, for the banks to be actually
named? Ron Paul.
It was a guy called Bernie Sanders. I will never forget that. That was printed in the Financial Times.
That Sanders did that, huh?
Okay. It wouldn't surprise me. I know that Ron Paul and a congressman out of Florida, Alan, I can't think of his last name.
Alan Grayson,
thank you very much. They're the ones that called for that audit. Bernie Sanders may have been right in there with them, but those two guys in the House, because the committee that controlled that was in the House, they called for the audit, and the details of that audit, I repeat, are in the book.
And George, I'll just say and go off the air. Imagine that $20 trillion, how many roads you could have fixed.
And bridges and things like that, and fixing the power grid against an EMP attack.
Exactly.
Yep, so true. Greg, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. I don't know. Stupidity, John? Greed? What is it?
Well, it's greed, George. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It's just pure, unadulterated greed. And being run out of Basel, you've got greed and you've got control. There is an effort, without question, to control the economies of the planet and keep the international banks, propped up with these derivatives. So when the derivatives bubble breaks, the big banks are protected, and I repeat, as we talked about last hour, the depositors, particularly in the United States, above the FDIC insurance level, are at risk.
Some quick tips on what you suggest people do. Buy gold, buy silver, what do they do with their money, how do they pay down their debt, what do you think we should do over the next couple of years?
Number one, and while people, want to try and take their reserve assets and have it make a bunch of money, my first rule is preserve the assets in a deflationary environment. Cash is king. Stay liquid. Stay very, very liquid, number one. Number two, I am a strong proponent of precious metals, particularly silver. Silver, 75, 80%, gold maybe, 20%.
I'd love, and it's cheaper to buy.
Yes, and there's a lot more leverage with silver. So cash, silver, if you can find some good multifamily real estate, and this is a case-by-case basis, we can get a duplex, a triplex, a fourplex if you're an investor. People have to live. They pay rents.
Even better if you moved into one of them.
Exactly, and the other,
and they paid for it.
The other person pays the rent. So those are a few tips. The other thing is this, George. Get out of the big money center banks. You got accounts in, Chase, B of A, Citibank, Wells. Move to a smaller independent bank or a regional bank or a credit union. It's those big banks that are full of the derivatives. There's $227 trillion worth of derivatives in this country, in banks in this country. So I recommend that people move to more independent banks or credit unions.
Some of those big banks just don't even know what they're doing, do they?
They know. They know. They're greedy. They know what they're doing. They don't see the risk.
Yeah, but this could be the house of cards for them. The whole thing could come down.
Yeah. They when you say they don't know what they're doing, they think they know what they're doing. I guess that's the right answer to the question.
I was on hold for a bank a couple weeks ago, a big bank. 30 minutes, I hung up. I mean, it's just the customer service is lousy.
Yeah. Yeah, I bank with a local independent bank and get great customer service.
Let's go now to Earl, the Duke of Earl in New York. Hey, Earl, go ahead.
Good morning from upstate New York.
Yes, sir.
Two quick comments and then my question, please.
Mm-hmm.
We have a savings bank here in Seneca Falls that's advertising no down payment or PMI. My second comment is... I graduated class of 74, and a classmate of mine is vice chair of Goldman Sachs. Investigate him. His, I don't know if I should say his name.
No, don't say his name yet, but we get the picture.
And my question was going to be about, I just moved into a federal credit union. I'm also a disabled veteran, and I live month to month.
Thanks for serving,
so
by the way.
How secure are the going to be the credit unions? And I'll take my answers off the air.
You got it. Credit unions, what do you think?
Thanks for the service, Earl. Credit unions in general are great. You should just ask them, make sure they're not loaded with derivatives. Most credit unions are not. But you could just call and ask them, or if you can read the financial statement, you can go online and read it. But if not, just call them and just ensure they're not pregnant with derivatives. There's a whole chapter in my book on Goldman Sachs, by the way, Earl. So you might find that of interest. Whether or not your friend is mentioned, I don't know. But there's a whole chapter in there on Goldman Sachs and how they have been involved in this mess. But generally, I'm a fan of credit unions.
Let's talk again about the bail-ins. That's scary.
Yeah, the bail-in was set up, George, by the Dodd-Frank Act, which redid the bankruptcy laws such that the derivatives are protected, as we talked about in the prior hour. And it says that troubled banks can be made whole. That resolved is the word that they use, but basically made whole. By getting, stocks and bonds and other unsecured creditors. You put your money in the bank, I'm telling you, it's no longer yours, it belongs to the bank, and you are an unsecured creditor, and the Dodd-Frank Act puts you behind the derivatives. So that's what the bail-in policy is. The Dodd-Frank bill said, we're going to prevent bailouts, no more taxpayer bailouts, but in fact, by bailing in, you put depositors at risk, number one, and if there's a derivative explosion, the FDIC is never going to be able to cover the banks, and they will go to the Treasury, and either the Treasury will print or they won't. According to Dodd-Frank, it's against the law now to use taxpayer money for a bailout.
I know we lent General Motors a lot of money, and they paid us back.
Yes.
But would they have gone under, and indeed gone under, if we didn't save them?
I don't know the answer to that question, George. I don't know.
A lot of jobs
were. I'm not a fan of government intervention. I don't think the government should be saving any business. And if General Motors or anybody else, can't manage their affairs such that they have to struggle, then they need to, confront their policies and deal with them. I don't know whether they would have gone under or not. The fact of the matter is that bailout, most of that bailout money or a lot of that bailout money, it went back to Wall Street. You may remember Hank Paulson, who was the CEO of Goldman Sachs right before the crisis in 2006, right before the crisis, he came down to Washington. He became the Secretary of Treasury. When the crisis hit, he went and stomped through Congress, saying there's going to be blood running in the streets, my words, not his. Much of that bailout money, I use the word much, that adjective may be an exaggeration, but a lot of bailout money went back to Goldman Sachs and his other friends on Wall Street and to AIG Insurance. So I don't think that's not the government's job to bail out companies. I don't care whether it's General Motors or a bank or whatever. I'm a free market guy, and you run your business in a profitable way or you deal with the consequences.
Yeah, interesting. Well, Lee Iacocca tapped into a government loan with Chrysler and paid him back.
Yes, he did, and he did a great job. Listen, if I were in their position, it doesn't mean I wouldn't go to the government and go, give me a hand. From a policy point of view, I don't think it's good. I don't think it's good government.
I mean, I have been doing a little studying over the work of Apple since this debacle with the FBI and, going back and forth. But I did a little homework on Steve Jobs, God rest his soul. And when he got dumped at Apple and then brought back years later to save Apple, he turned to Bill Gates and borrowed $150 million to help save Apple and infuse that.
I actually didn't know that. Well, that's an interesting story.
It sure is. It sure is. And Gates came in. He invested in preferred stock, non-voting,
right,
and helped save Apple Computer. As much as we thought they were all rivals, he saved them.
Those two guys seem to have been buddies.
They were. They had a love-hate relationship. But at the end, toward the end of Steve Jobs' life, they got closer. And again, when Bill Gates bailed out Apple, they really started getting close again.
Interesting.
Amazing story. Let's go to Wayne in Illinois. Welcome to the program. Hello, Wayne.
Hello, Coast to Coast family. George, you have the greatest show in the history of the earth.
Thank you, Wayne.
Yes, I just wanted to disagree with him just on one point.
That's okay.
In general, I agree that businesses shouldn't be bailed out, but I think General Motors was the exception. And also, I think they paid back all of the money that they were given back to the federal government.
Yeah, no, they did. And I think we still retain some stock as a
right.
Government.
I think that was like an exception. They were going down the tubes. They had to be saved. But I agree with him when he, like, for instance, those investment banking casino houses on Wall Street, those are the ones who shouldn't have been saved. But anyway, what I want to ask him is, like a few callers ago, the guy who called up about the $20 to $30 trillion, did he say that Bernie Sanders had something to do with the Fed printing that money up and passing it out?
No, what he said, Wayne, was that Bernie Sanders was instrumental in calling for the audit of the Fed that exposed the fact that the Fed lent these trillions of dollars to other banks around the planet. It had nothing to do with the United States. They just doled out money by the trillions.
I have a theory about that. I think they did that. It was basically a bribe to keep those countries under our dollar currency reserve system because of organizations like the BRIC nations who are trying to pull them away. So I think that 20 to 30 trillion was just basically a bribe. But here's my question to the guests. The Republicans are going to do nothing about this derivatives betting. Hillary Clinton, she's joined to the hip with Wall Street and the corporations. She's not going to do anything. The only one I see who's even going to think about doing anything about this derivatives trading is Bernie Sanders. And if they don't stop this derivatives trading, just like you're saying, the bubble is going to burst, and we're going to be in a depression way worse than the one that hit in 29. So who do you think is the best president to deal with this problem? And thank you very much. I'll take my ass off the air.
Okay, Wayne.
All right. Well, I'm not going to weigh into the presidential politics. I mean, it's obvious Bernie Sanders is, he's not a fan of Wall Street. And there's a lot of what he says in that regard that's absolutely correct. You know, Hillary got her $675,000 given talks to Goldman Sachs. There are all those factors. But I don't think either one of the parties will do anything. I agree with you there, Wayne. I have been to Congress. I have talked to congressmen about this. They don't actually have a clue.
No, not at all. John, we're coming back with final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Wow, riveting. Okay, welcome back to Coast next hour. We go live to the United Kingdom. David Icke with us as we talk about his latest work. He's one of the good ones, isn't he? But we'll come back in a moment with John Truman Wolf, of course, and we will take final phone calls with him. Welcome back to Coast, John Truman Wolf with us. John, what's your next endeavor after this work?
Well, I'm very active in publishing an online magazine, George, called The Hard Truth, thehardtruthmag.com, and we're exposing this current issue exposes the government funding of Google, government intelligence funding by the NSA, the CIA, and DARPA. Raises the question, is Google really a front for government intelligence?
Really? Interesting. Interesting investigation.
A lot of investigative work.
Wow. That took you some time to dig up some rocks, huh?
It did. I mean, there was some research. There was another story written about it, and it's a little bit startling. I mean, I think people kind of have that suspicion to a very certain degree, but the story, you know, starts with Sergey Brin, you know, rollerblading into a room at Stanford while he was doing his PhD work, developing the search engine that Google uses, and giving a report to two people, both of whom were government intelligence agents. This is, you know, this is very well documented, and the story goes on. So I'm doing that. I'm writing another. I'm writing a fiction book as we speak. I've got a detective series that I write about. So I'm enjoying being creative, George.
Well, good for you. Okay, let's wrap things up with final calls for you, John. They are lining up here. Every line is lit. Truly amazing. Let's go to Daniel in Richmond, California now. Hi, Daniel. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, John. Great show.
Thank you.
I wanted to put a couple things on the table and get a couple questions in. You know, George, I've called in and let you know that, you know, I've got a military-grade implant similar to the Lawrence Livermore Labs that films through the eyes and collects data through my ears.
Hmm.
And
how'd that happen?
Here, well, I signed a contract in ROTC that stated, you know, by signing here, I authorize the U.S. military to use any technology on my person, including futuristic technology.
Oh, boy.
Developed. So I want to be quick, not to take up too much time.
Go ahead.
I want to say, you know, if I've got these ocular implants at the five, you know, some guys at the five top stock brokerage firms, I know when the trades are happening, where they're coming from. And I don't want to say I disagree, but I'm going to say it. I guess I'll say I disagree, man, because I'm in the doors at all these companies. I was delivering biological product, food, to Amazon, Lamb, Google, all these places. You wouldn't believe how cordial they are at Google. And man, like the president was saying, these people are bright-eyed and super hardworking.
Sure.
The tech sector is working so hard right now. And the question is, you know, I was playing the market a little bit, and I shied out, and just a little bit of shares, because I don't have much, because some people have imposed me into the poverty level with this technology, and my government doesn't want to step up and address it. But what about this guy out in China, guys, that's got that that switch to infuse the capital from their Federal Reserve? Their market's been around for 25 years. And, you know, if I'm that guy and I call you up over to my house, George and John, and I'm like, man, check this out. Watch this. See how the market's dipping? I'm not hitting my my switch right now. I hit it a couple times, and, you know, we watch what happened. But I know if I bet on some really great companies like the ones I mentioned,
mm-hmm.
well, I'm going to tell you what we're doing out here in America. I'm going to throw a stock tip everybody's way, because I got a friend who's blind. His name's Dante Murphy. And I call up these implant companies, and I found one. They're called Second Sight. And they're on the NASDAQ under EYES. They make this Argus II implant that you, it's a retinal implant, and you need to have a camera on your glasses, but you can see black and white images. And they got a hush-hush thing going on right now, guys, called the Orion chip.
That is amazing technology. I'll check into that. I'll see that. We don't give stock tips here. But I'll check into that, too. I guess there are some great technological-inclined companies there, John.
Well, there certainly are. There, you know, I mean, that is where the world lives today, George, as you know better than I do. It lives in technology. The universe has changed to zeros and ones, and China has got its share of those big time, as do we. As does Russia. I spoke in Moscow a couple of years ago, about 18 months ago, at their Silicon Valley outside of Moscow, and so they have a lot of, you know, technology development. So it's a very, very important part of the world, without question. I'm not a fan of the stock market. I mean, I think. This thing has topped. I don't know that there won't be another little blip, but I'm not a fan of equities. I think people should be into cash and precious metals, and I don't think it's the time to be in the stock market personally.
Let's go to Joe in Detroit, Michigan. Joseph, you're on the air with us. Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, great show tonight.
Thank you, Joe.
I was having a question about this bail-in. Now, with the bail-in, the bank basically steals the depositors' money. Now, they use that to buy stock and then sell the stock to pay off their bad debts, or do they take that directly and pay off the derivatives with it? And then if they did use it to buy stock, who would want their stock if their bank's going down the tubes, you know?
it's a very good question, Joe. The stock is used to recap. They set up another entity, and the stock is used to capitalize the new entity. And they basically can confiscate funds. And, you know, I've heard from the FDIC. The FDIC said, well, you know, we would protect up to the insurance limit. We've discussed previously in the show that the FDIC's insurance fund is nowhere near enough to cover if the derivatives explode, as Warren Buffett called them, financial weapons of mass destruction. But they basically recapitalized the new entity, and you're absolutely right. Who wants stock in a failing bank? But you don't, under these rules, Joe, you don't have a choice. The bank can convert that money and put it into stock. This program is targeted to the bigger banks. What they call, this is banker speak, G-SIFIs, globally systematically important financial institutions. This is what these international bankers come up with in terms of names. But that's what they do with the stock, Joe.
They do that with the stock, and there's all kinds of manipulation. Now, are we going to get any warning signs, John? Are we going to see this happen before it happens?
Well, George, the honest answer to your question is, I mean, I think it's happening now. I mean, you mean in terms of the bail-in?
The complete collapse. We're going to wake up one morning and our money's gone?
Well, I think when the derivatives bubble breaks, and I repeat, I think it's a when, not an if, a bank will go down like Lehman Brothers went down.
How much time will we have?
I don't think we'll have a lot of time, George, and I think there will be bank holidays like there were during the Depression.
Oh, my gosh.
I encourage people to take some cash and, you know, stick it in the house.
In a bank holiday, so people know the doors are locked, right?
That's right. You can't access, you know, you can't use your ATM, you can't use your credit card, so, you know, take a little bit of, you know, some cash and, you know, put it aside along with some silver. But I don't think that, to answer your question, I don't think there'll be a lot of warning. I think it'll happen very quickly.
Like overnight?
Yes.
Yeah. That's no
24 warning. Hours. Yeah.
So we can't make a run. You can't make a run on the bank. Nothing.
No.
Banks don't have that much cash there.
No, they don't. It's let out. That's a very, very good point. You know, you can't get your money out of the bank. They don't have it. They lend it out.
If you go there and ask for $5,000, they may not have it.
They may not have it, or they may just refuse to give it to you, as you mentioned email you got at the top of the show. They can just, you know, they want, J.P. Morgan, I mean, I got one email. I haven't talked to...
They'll take check deposits all night long.
Yeah, but they're demanding now ID when you go into the bank to make a deposit. You have to have ID to put money into the bank. You used to have ID to take money out. Now you need ID, and this was a Chase policy, I believe, that you need ID to put cash in your account.
Jeez. An ID to put cash in your
account. You've got a war on cash, you've got negative interest rates, and you've got a banking system pregnant with quadrillion dollars worth of derivatives. And folks need to, you know that's the case and protect themselves.
Let's go to Mike in Ohio now. Hi, Mike. You're up with us. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, George. Good morning, Mr. Wolf.
Hi.
George, you have an excellent show. I really enjoy it.
Thank you, Mike.
It every night.
I appreciate you as a guest and as a listener and everything else. I appreciate
it. Yeah, I wanted to get back to you. I do have an answer for you on your Apple question, but I'll send you an email on that.
Okay.
And, Mr. Wolf, how do you feel about the, you said it's a deflationary economy, but how do you feel about other commodities? I know George is really good on gold and silver. How do you feel about, say, like Chicago Board of Trade, parking money in agricultural contracts, or even the BRIC nations? parking money or using money to use that as kind of a hedge if the bubble bursts. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Go ahead.
Mike, I mentioned in the book, and there's a whole chapter on solutions in there, but one of the solutions is diversify a little bit into some foreign currencies, a little bit. But, you know, get some Swiss francs, get some, you know, some Chinese yuan. These can change, so it, you know, depends on how the currency markets are manipulated. But I think it makes sense to diversify a little bit into some other currencies. You know, I don't think the India rupee or the South African rand are good, but or the Russian ruble, but the yuan, but the Swiss franc is always kind of stood the test of time. So I think that that makes sense in terms of trading contracts on the commodities markets. You know, that's paper. I think if the stock market takes a dive, it'll affect the commodities markets dramatically. I do think that things that you can trade, you know, if you've got foodstuffs, if you've got farmland that can grow food, I think that's smart. It may sound a little bit antiquated, but I think it makes great sense. I mean, if it really hits the fan, folks, you know, things like food and water will become important. And it's why things like cash and silver make sense. I have worked in the commodities markets, and the options markets. You're playing with the sharks in there. You got to know what you're doing. You get eaten alive.
So true. So true. But you can survive it if you know what you're doing and plan ahead.
Yeah, you have to really know what you're doing. But you're right.
Now we go to Tom in the Bronx in New York. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
How are you? They're very disturbing thoughts tonight. I'd like to say that it's too much to ask that the Fed be dissolved and put them on the unemployment line, but they should at least be reined in where, I'll give you, for instance, like they always talk about Social Security. And Social Security, the last time they needed money for the Vietnam War, they took millions of dollars out of the Social Security system. In other words, and then they say, well, Social Security's going broke, and they blame people for retiring or whatever. But get this. Get this particular situation. What they should do is print money and put the money back that they owe the Social Security system. They say, well, in order for us to put the money back, we'll have to make loans from the Fed. And then we'll have to pay interest for it. I think that's a lot of baloney. They should just print that money and put it back where it belongs. Millions of dollars. Recently, there was a news clip just last week or so where they are again borrowing money from the Social Security system to pay for God knows what, you know? In other words, and like I say, I wish they would dissolve the Fed. That's all I can
say. Well, that's not going to happen. You're right, but it's not going to happen, John.
Well, if they dissolved the Fed and went back to what the Constitution says, where the government would, issue the money, the Fed, as I'm sure most of your listeners know, is owned by New York banks. It's a private institution. Why are we paying interest on the Fed printing money, as we talked about earlier, George, out of thin air? Why didn't the government do it? Abraham Lincoln did it during the Civil War. He went to New York to borrow money for the Civil War. The bankers wanted to charge him an arm and a leg in interest. He just printed. He had the government print the money. They were called greenbacks.
Greenbacks. That's right.
That's where that term comes from. So. I agree with Tom. I think that would be a great solution. We should get rid of them. We should reverse the law that established the Fed. Whether or not that's going to happen is a very different subject.
Jack in Seattle. Go for it, Jack.
Hi. So talk to your guest for a moment about the unemployment figures. Mm-hmm. It always irks me a little when this figure of 93 million is thrown around. That is the number of the total, what is called, working age population of the United States who are not working right now. I think the total of is 250 million, with 93 million not working. However, of that total, no more than probably about 13 or 14 million are people who are actually unemployed, looking for work, or have given up looking for work. The rest of them are students, spouses whose husband or in some cases wives work and who are not looking for a job, have not been looking for a job, and do not want a job. So to throw that figure of 93 million around as an unemployment total is just not really at all accurate.
Well, Jack, I appreciate the comment. The point is that those figures and those people used to be counted in the unemployment figure, and they no longer are.
In the employment figure, too.
In the unemployment figure, sorry. So the people that have been out of work and the people that have stopped looking for jobs and the people who have not tried to get a job, they are no longer included in the unemployment figure. So I get your point. It's a gross figure. But my point is the unemployment rate is much higher than what's reported because they are omitting critical data.
I hope to God I don't call you up one day, John, and go, I can't get any money out of my ATM. Nothing works.
Yeah.
Oh, what a day that'll be, huh?
I hope I don't hear from you in that regard, George.
All right, John. Keep in touch with us, okay?
Thanks so much for having me, George.
John's book, The Coming Financial Crisis, website's all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He also has a bestseller out there called Crisis by Design. He knows what he's talking about. Up next, we're going to go live to the United Kingdom to talk with David Icke about some worldly events. You know him. He's one of the best when it comes to that super government. He's next.